Welcome back, Crime Poppers. I'm Natalie.
I'm Adam.
And we're just your average married couple spending quality time covering true crime.
Yeah.
Join us weekly as we pop open some true crime cases and casually debrief what we think happened. We've got some wine. I'm popping wine. You're popping what?
Manhattan.
So, wow. Look at us dropping two episodes in our first week.
Boom.
What? This is amazing. So moving forward, our weekly episodes will be released every Monday. This week, we actually had someone recommend over on our Instagram page. If you're not following us, you should definitely be following us because we put out interesting case facts over there and all of our updates, giveaways. You can find us at Crime Poppers on Instagram and Twitter.
This is fun. I enjoy this. This is a lot of fun, actually.
Good. Yeah. I really like it. I enjoy that you're enjoying it.
Oh, good.
So someone wrote in this week and said, you know, I'd love to hear some like Canadian cases. And I was like, okay, sure. I'll bring that up to you today.
Do Canadians kill people?
I'm just kidding. You know what? We actually have some of the most notorious serial killers. Ted Bundy.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
And Carla Mahoka.
Yeah.
Remember that story? I'm sure we'll cover it at some point. It's just like one of those cases that's overdone so much. And I just don't want to... like, repeat it. There's not anything new about it.
Cliche thing.
It's like...
yeah, you want something unique.
Right. Actually, it's interesting that you asked that because I was looking at stats today because I was curious with the same thing. And they don't have any 2019 facts released yet. But if you go on to Stats Canada, it says in 2018, police reported that there were 651 homicides, which actually was a decrease from 2017. And that represents a 4% decrease in the homicide rate year over year, which is kind of interesting. Where do you think the top murders would be
in Canada?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you'd probably think wherever the most population is, but I'm going to say it's going to be like some rural kind of thing, like almost like people, I don't know, just are bored or like don't have anything else better to do. They're just like, you know what? I'm going to commit a murder. Okay. So the number one in all the provinces, I'm going to go with Alberta.
This is actually quite shocking because the numbers are quite staggering and none of it is number one.
Well, that makes sense because everyone owns a gun.
Really?
Well, yeah.
That's a thing?
I mean, everyone hunts. Everybody hunts.
Oh, well, that's true.
You know, that's moose, some, like, seals, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Like, and then not really a close second, but second is Northwest Territories and then Yukon.
Everyone owns a gun.
And then Manitoba, which is so strange. At fourth Manitoba. On the list. And these are 2018 stats.
I figured Alberta.
And then Alberta's after Saskatchewan.
Okay. Well.
And Ontario is kind of midpoint. Lowest crime rate in Canada? What do you guess?
Ooh, I'm going to go for sure, like Newfoundland or Prince Edward Island.
Yep, you got
Newfoundland.
It.
Newfoundland. They'd just be like, you know what? Screw it, bye. I'm just going to get drunk.
Actually, sorry. Prince Edward Island actually had zero murders in 2018.
That's a winner,
Newfoundland,
right?
Had, it says 0.3% of the population. So crazy stats. Well, this week we're covering the murder of a Canadian realtor out in Victoria, BC. And that was the murder of Lindsay Buziak. Let's pop this case open, shall we?
Let's do it.
So we're back, and I have another case this week where you see a strong advocate family member who will just not give up until this case is solved.
Good.
And I think it's timely that we're covering this case because it's not solved yet. And I know you hate Adam. I mean, I personally prefer cases that, you know, the murderer is identified and it's a story that you kind of feel like good at the end, that the murder,
it's like a
was
movie
caught.
And you never know. I hate those movies where they have no ending.
I know.
It just kind of drifts off. You're like, no.
I know.
Invested all this time and then nothing.
And then it's a heartbreak.
For you to be determined.
Okay, but stick with me for a second, because I'm hoping down the road we'll be covering a part two of this story when they're actually able to identify who committed this heinous crime. Is that a word? Heinous? Yeah?
Heinous. Okay. I believe so.
Yeah, this absolutely. Case is also so frustrating on so many levels, and I can't wait to get your insight on it, because it takes place in the realtor scene. And if you're listening, you might know that Adam is currently going through his real estate agent license. So it's kind of interesting. So I'm really excited to hear you.
Real estate salesperson. They're actually fighting to change the terminology.
But are you criticizing the way anyways, so the story that I'm going to tell you today is about Lindsay Buziak, who was a 24-year-old real estate agent who was just a year into her career. And she was working in Saanich, BC. Saanich. Have you ever been there? Have you ever heard of no. Saanich?
No.
Such a small town. Apparently it's on Victoria Island.
I've been to Victoria Island, but not Saanich.
Okay.
Went to Nanaimo and all that kind of stuff.
Damn. Well, maybe you were around when this happened. So on a True Crime Daily interview, her father, Jeff Buziak, stated that Lindsay was a very social, outgoing girl. She had lots of friends and made friends easily. She liked to make people laugh. She's my kind of girl, it sounds like. And her father makes note that her being a realtor was just a perfect career path for her. It ticked all of the boxes. Lindsay was a junior realtor, but she was making some big moves. She was passionate and she was successful. And in fact, she came from a family that was also realtors. And her boyfriend, Jason Zalo, his family was also in the real estate scene. He was a mortgage broker and had also kind of just been selling houses on the side. So Lindsay and Jason were actually living together at the time and had been dating for about a year leading up to the time of her murder. So at the end of January in 2008, Lindsay gets this random call from a woman who she later tells family and friends that this woman had a really strange Mexican or Spanish accent. She couldn't really pinpoint it, but this woman called her personal cell phone, not the cell phone that's listed on all of her marketing materials at RE/MAX. So no one internally had her personal cell phone number, which right off the bat, she thought that that was really strange. And she actually asked the woman, she's like, how did you get my number? Like, I don't have this number listed anywhere. And the woman's like, oh, I got it from one of your past clients as a referral. And then Lindsay still pushed further and was like, okay, what client are you referring to? So the woman told her a name of a client that Lindsay actually had. So thinking, you know, internally in this case, you would have to do so much homework to know these facts, because the woman tells her a specific name of a client that she had. Lindsay's like, okay, I'm going to call up this client and actually see if this woman's telling the truth. Right off the bat, she just thought this whole thing was really sketchy, because
she looked into it that far. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes somebody just called, like, whatever. Like, who cares?
I know. Like, harmful. So she must have really been thrown off, because she said that the accent that this woman had, it almost sounded like she was faking it. Like, it wasn't actually a true accent.
She's like acting like she's someone else. She's
trying to throw it off. So Lindsay calls up her past client to make sure that, you know, she had given the referral, but she couldn't get a hold of this particular client, which was just seemed so convenient at the time. So Lindsay, you know, just kind of throws it behind her. She's like, whatever, this is a huge deal, because this woman seems to be in an urgent need for a property. She has very specific requests for this property that she's looking for. She says her and her husband just moved to town. They're looking for something in the 1 million price range, 3 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms. They needed a specific area that their live-in nanny could kind of have her own area. She placed so much urgency in saying that she needs this house right away. It needs to be about 15 to 20 minutes from town. And you can actually see, and we'll link the images in our show notes and on the website, but you can see in her day planner, Lindsay wrote down all of these details, and she kind of like was excited about this deal. It was a $1 million deal. It was the biggest deal that she would have ever made in her 1 year career thus far. So
this
she was
12 years ago.
Yeah.
So back then, yeah, that would be, you know, yeah, at least 2 mil today.
And yeah, I mean, it's a large commission. So that's kind of why she threw everything behind her. Even just like getting a weird vibe right from the beginning, she's like, you know what? I'm just going to see this through, even though the woman sounded a little bit sketchy. But according to an NBC Dateline interview, it's reported that Lindsay couldn't shake the fact that this accent was so strong. She even told her friends and family about it. She's like, okay, I'm going to meet this lady. She apparently got a referral from me. For her to even take that extra step to tell people about it, like, it must have been really bothering her and really throwing her off. Thing is, like, let this be a little life lesson. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is, because you don't just buy a $1 million house like off the whim and like not want to see other houses or not want any other options. It was just like Lindsay had gave them this one house. Here it is. And they're like, we're ready to buy it on the spot, is what they told her.
So if this is going to be one of her or the biggest deal she's ever done, as much as she's unsure, I mean, she's going to go for it, right? I mean, she might be cautiously optimistic, et cetera, but she's still going to obviously go for it. She's not just be like, oh, it doesn't seem right. Just like, no, write it off. Like, obviously she's going to pursue it. She's just going to be a little more careful. So it sounds like she's already being suspicious and doing her due diligence. So, but she's going to...
Don't be suspicious. Well, be suspicious in this case, especially if it's too good to be true. It probably is.
And if it's a rural property, so... That's what it
This was in the suburbs. It was like a new development area. It was a quiet street. There were like four houses, I believe, on the street. Okay. So it was a corner lot. And I can show you a picture of what the house looks like. It's a beautiful house. So you're right. You know, she wants to see this through. But at the same time, she talks to her boyfriend about it, Jason. And he actually offers to do the listing for, like, to do the showing for her. And she's like, no, you know what? Like, I'm a big girl kind of thing. Like, I want to.
Together.
Right. But he didn't want to like affect her confidence or make it seem like she wasn't capable to her clients. It's noted that.
Chill in the back, you know, just kind of be present, but not.
Well, this is what happens. So.
I mean, if you're a real estate agent and you didn't feel comfortable. I mean, I would be like, okay, can I just wait outside in my car?
Right, and that's exactly, you know, like, we'll get there. Okay, so a little bit about Jason is he's a big dude, right? He's 240 pounds, over 6 feet tall, so he can be intimidating when he wants. And this is coming from Lindsay's dad talking about on True Crime Daily how Jason decides that he's gonna go along anyways and kind of just be outside just in case. So she sets the viewing for February 2nd, 2008. That day comes around and the timeline of this case is so precise. I have done a lot of research on cases. I've listened to a lot of true crime. I've watched a lot of true crime and I don't
a little too much.
And the amount of time that they had to do this in broad daylight. I mean, it's 5:30. It's getting into nighttime, but it's still light outside as reported. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's like little room to even take a piss. Otherwise, we might not even be here talking about this case. That's how tight this timeline is. So Jason and Lindsay go out for lunch around 4:30. So about an hour before she has the viewing. She heads home to change shortly before heading over to the house. And Jason ended up going over to an auto body shop. He was doing a deal there and was actually looking to buy some real estate for this particular client. So they separate, and his plan is that he's going to come back to the house once the showing has started and kind of just be in the car outside just in case, monitor everything's good, everything's cool.
But she's just meeting this woman, right?
Yes, yes.
Just the woman. But because she has a Spanish-Mexican accent, isn't that like racist? Like, I mean, I guess in Victoria, BC, I guess there's not a lot of...
You kill me.
Hispanic? I don't know. Anyway, like if she was white, like old lady, it'd be like cool. But
this is weird. This is weird though, because first it's the lady that's doing the communications with her over the phone. And then she actually calls her again before the meeting to say that she's not feeling well and it's only her husband that's going to be coming now to see the house. However, when Lindsay gets to the house, both the husband and the wife are there at the viewing. So it was like a lot of like wishy-washy stuff happening. They couldn't decide who was going
to
go.
I mean, a lot of people don't know how to plan and
come. If it was you, you'd be going with your mom.
That's true.
Literally yesterday you went to look at a house with your mom.
Two, yeah.
You and your mom would be butchered. So she heads over to this viewing and Jason.
Apparently only if the person I was meeting was Hispanic. But anyway.
Oh my God. So Jason then shortly after heads over to the house to meet Lindsay as well. So I'm going to read you a little excerpt from the website that Lindsay's dad actually started, lindsaybusiakmurder.com. So while Jason is heading over to the house, he texts Lindsay and says, I'm going to be there in about 10 to 15 minutes. Okay. And then Lindsay texts back and says, okay, I'll see you in a bit. I got to go.
Suspenseful. Sorry. You got like the end of the minute here. So
I'm I'm telling you the minutes here are insane. Okay.
I was trying to figure out the whole relevance of all these little things that like, how is this going to matter? But okay, I'm with you.
So she texts him back and says, I got to go. The clients are here. And Jason was seen leaving the clients at this auto body shop at about 5:30. Okay. According to two...
How far is he away? Like, is that...
Not far. Okay. Like, not far. The 10 to 15 minute drive, he says.
Oh, still far. Okay.
According to two witness statements, Lindsay is seen greeting the couple just before 5:30, who is reported to be a male about 6 feet tall with brown hair, wearing a long brown coat, and a blonde woman wearing this very distinctive dress. And you can Google the dress and I'll include it in our show notes too. But it's got like these bright pink stripes on it. Like if you're showing up being trying to be lay low undercover. Like
bright blonde hair.
Well, she has blonde hair. But she's wearing this dress that has this bright pink swivel line through it. Like you can't miss it, right?
And she's apparently like Spanish, Mexican, some sort of... South American thing, yet she has blonde hair, which
could have been a wig.
Typically a thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So let me break this this timeline down for you a little bit more, because my God, I don't know how everything happened in such a short time frame that it did. Mm-hmm. And the True Crime Daily report also says that there was about 9 to 11 minutes when this whole thing happened. So this is how it goes. They see records that Lindsay unlocked the lockbox to the house at 5:29. Apparently it was computerized. I'm not sure. Yeah. You might know more about this, but they can see exactly when people open these boxes, which helps this case a lot because they know that she opened it at that precise minute. Then Jason sends her another text message at 5:38 and tells her that he's just a few minutes away now at this point.
Damn.
But Lindsay never opens this message. Apparently Blackberries, it shows when you, back then the Blackberry showed that you open the messages. Mm-hmm. She never opens this message. And then at 5:41, a few minutes later, there's a random outgoing call from Lindsay's phone to a contact that she's never even talked to in like years. It was this random friend that she had. And they think that this was a pocket dial during the exact moment that Lindsay was being attacked.
Right. Or the killers are just trying to like throw some... distracting noodle type.
Dude, there's no time for that. There's no time. Just think about this. That's at 5:41. And then at 5:45, Jason and his friend pull up to the house and they actually see the suspects at the front door, but he only catches the back side of him. So because what happens is the suspects are now done literally within minutes.
So what happened to her?
Just wait. Okay. So Jason pulls up and he sees them at the front door and they go back inside because Jason thinks that they're just starting the viewing.
Right.
So because the suspects are walking back inside, close the doors. He's like, oh, the viewing just starts. Right. So he's not thinking anything of it.
She unlocks, you know, right? Just following her.
Exactly. At 5:55. Now, this is 10 minutes later after Jason sees the suspects go back inside the house. So he's thinking 10 minutes later. He's like, I don't want to be an overbearing boyfriend. I'm just going to wait a little bit. Send her a text message from the car. So he actually pulls out of the driveway again because he doesn't want to like cause any weird attention and to the buyers to see like who is pulling up.
Mm. Oh, so you don't think that the attack happened on the porch?
No, it didn't.
You know that?
I know that.
Okay.
And I'll get there in a second.
Okay.
You have so many questions.
I do.
I love it. So Jason pulls back out of the driveway and pulls around the corner and just parks on the side of the street. And he texts Lindsay, are you okay? I mean, I would like to think that if you were coming to meet me in this case and I've already expressed to you that I was concerned and worried that something was fishy, you might come in right away. Just be like, hey, like, you know, just be like, I'm here. I'm your ride or whatever. Just say something just to check it out.
Or I texted you, you didn't respond. So just, you know, I'm waiting outside. Just some sort of... But at the same time, he's probably just thinking everything's just normal, cool, I'm busy, I'm answering a message or whatever.
Right.
You know.
And she doesn't respond to this message. Oh my God, I totally forgot about BBM.
Yeah.
So she doesn't respond to this message. And so at 6:05, and I must give him credit because, you know, he didn't wait a terribly long amount of time before reacting. So at 6:05, him and his friend, because he had a friend with him that came to this auto body shop with him, they go up to the front door and it's locked. And they're like, what the fuck? What? So they must have locked the door when they went inside. Why would they lock the door? They didn't see Lindsay leave, which is weird. Her car was still there in the driveway. So they immediately call 911, which is like so good because remember a few weeks back, I saw something fishy outside of our house and I was hesitated. Like, I hesitated to call 911. Like and then minutes, when I called horrible. Them, they're like, you should have called us sooner. So, I mean, they acted pretty fast given the circumstances, but now they're in panic mode because they're like, the front door is locked. Lindsay's car is still here. I don't see the clients. What is happening? So they run around the backyard and Jason gives his friend a boost up over the fence. And sure enough, the back patio door is actually opened and unlocked. Oh. So his friend runs inside and runs to the front door where Jason meets him.
Wait, pause. Why are they going through like full, like level 5, like worry? I mean, It's not really, the lead up isn't there. Like it's a new build, expensive house. Like that's not typically something you would be suspicious of people that are in that market. Like they're,
I know,
typically, you know, more well to do and not into murder. So anyway,
well, you're right. But at the same time,
in a newer area, like it's not even, I don't know, it just doesn't.
Well, no, I think it's because Lindsay had expressed right. her concerns from the beginning. So they already had their backs up with this, right? Yeah. So I'm just going to play a little clip of when Jason tells the police officers his account of what happened when his friend unlocked the door and he was able to get inside the house.
Okay, I think you're locked. I pushed it open. Okay. He was already in front of me.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm running upstairs. And I was yelling, I'm like, Lindsay.
From there, Jason says he ran straight to the master bedroom where he found Lindsay's body and called police again at 6:11 p.m.
I just came running up the stairs.
Do you remember grabbing the banister at all, or?
Down there.
All right, so what you're hearing there is Jason telling police officers exactly what happened during this moment. So his friend lets him in. He barges through the front door and runs right upstairs into the master bedroom where he finds Lindsay stabbed to death.
Whoa.
On the bathroom, almost into the bathroom floor in the master bedroom.
Jesus.
She's on her back in a pool of blood, and she's been stabbed over 40 times. Oh my now, God. 40 times is an estimate. There's different news articles say 30, some say 40, some say 10. Like,
yeah,
she's been like, this is a vicious personal attack. Yeah.
Somebody died in that house, so it'd be pretty hard to sell afterward, wouldn't it? I mean, not to be insensitive, I'm just saying, like, that's messed up. Like, it's a new build, and it's like, oh, yeah.
Brand new house.
Like, let's start this off on a bad note.
Yeah.
And bad vibes.
Definitely apparently bad vibes, the builder, D'Souza, he ended up moving back into the house and I think he still lives there or owns it.
He's like, yeah, it's going to be really hard to sell.
I mean,
now.
How would you ever buy a house that someone's been murdered in?
I mean, I'm not.
Cuz you have to disclose that information, right?
Yeah, you do. Like one of the houses I looked at yesterday, apparently a woman died in it.
Murdered?
She didn't say, but she just said that apparently the body was there for a long time and they had to pretty much condemn the house.
What?
Yeah,
so you're just telling me this now?
I know. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I'm looking to
what
buy
else are
it
you
as
withholding?
Rental, but I mean, I wouldn't. Yeah, I don't know. It's messed up. She's like, yeah, like, so I have to disclose that. But I mean, we basically gutted it anyway, she said. I'm like, and we're in the basement. And she's like, can you smell that mold? I'm like, she's like, yeah, this place was disgusting. We power washed the basement like 3 times.
Why would you say that?
I know, right? And I'm like, okay. Yeah, I can smell a bit of the mold. But she's like, but everything's clean. Like, it's probably just in like the joists and such. Like,
oh,
we've done everything with
God.
Mold control and everything. And
I wonder if it was one of those crime scene cleaning. You don't follow the crime scene cleaning.
No, but you've
accounts.
Showed me a couple things, which is pretty messed
Bro,
up.
Bro, those are so disgusting. I'm wondering if it's one of those cases where it's like the body was literally like burning holes through the ground. That's how decay things will get. So gross. No. But yeah, that house is going to have a hard time selling, unfortunately. now we're at a point in the case where, you know, people have questions. And I think it's obvious on the surface for people to look at Jason and be like, like, could you have had something to do with this? And, you know, why did you barge through the front door and run directly upstairs into the master bedroom? Like, you almost knew that's where she was going to be. We do know that Jason was completely cooperative during this whole process, and he had actually offered to take a lie detector test, and he passed it. So he was quickly crossed off the list of suspects, and same with his friend that he had with him at the time. But at the same time, you know, Jeff Buziak, Lindsay's father, says that he still has some reservations because maybe he could have some involvement, right? They don't know. But at this point, according to police statements, he has been super cooperative and he has never really been considered a prime suspect in this case. So when Jason gets upstairs, him and his friend call 911 for a second time, because if you remember, they called 911 when they got to the front door and they noticed it was locked. I guess out of shock or, you know, adrenaline, they called again, and they can actually hear in the second police recording the sirens coming from the first call. So the police were already on their way in ambulances. And they get there and quickly assess the situation, separate Jason and his friend and take them into police custody to do all their questions and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Typical crime scene process, I would assume. When they do the autopsy on Lindsay, they find zero defensive wounds on her, meaning that there was no DNA under her nails, no signs of struggle. You know, like, because sometimes if you're thinking a sharp knife, people go like this and they put their arms up and cover their face. So maybe they have
from behind.
Exactly. So they're thinking that she was first attacked from behind as she was entering the bathroom to show the clients the bathroom from the master. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was probably taken down at this point by the two suspects. And there's no indication if it was one person stabbing or two people stabbing. I couldn't really find any information on angles of knives going in. And like, because when they break it down, they can almost tell from crime scenes, like whether this person was left or right handed. Like, they can get pretty specific, but there hasn't been really a lot of details about that yet. So another. Yeah.
One little thing, like, I mean, I've been in martial arts a lot when I was in my youth, and like, I was one belt away from my black belt, and I don't know, just like a bit of an interest for me. So I'm always watching like active self-protection videos, and they're not always
you
about gun.
Guys, if you want to watch some crazy real footage of things that have happened,
active self-protection on YouTube, it's amazing.
Not only is it like entertaining, it's also very educational.
Very educational. It's actually basically an educational video, but using videos and like live footage of people often getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a police officer involved shooting, or it's a crime of some sort, or it could even be like, you know, five guys attack, you know, some bystander, you know, just sitting there and it's just like, whoa, what happened here, you know? Anyways, but like, if you're a realtor and you have two clients that are basically, you know, you're showing a place, never put your back to people. If you're at all suspicious, never put your back. If you have to walk to a master bathroom, just say, hey, the master bathroom's right there. You go first, or go on ahead. I'll just, you know, always keep your back to the wall. Always face them. At least at the worst, keep a shoulder, you know, as they're passing by, but never put your back to
anybody. Is that like a known thing though? Like,
I don't know.
Is that in the course? I wonder if they teach that in the course.
Well, in all self-defense, I mean, absolutely never keep your, always keep some distance.
Especially if she was concerned. I mean, we have to give it to her. She's 24, right? When I was 24, I was a baby, right? Like, she's actually got a pretty good head on her shoulders, and, you know, it was an honest mistake.
But just saying, like, we have no idea. I'm just going out there for anybody. If you're ever at all, you know, concerned about your well-being, especially when it's, you know, there's more numbers of the other person than you, always keep your, you know, your back against a wall, or let them, you know, say, you know, go on, it's right here, I'll follow you, that kind of thing.
And now
it's totally back. You can do it in a total professional, chill way, while not actually.
Yeah, you totally can.
So
it's a good lesson.
And honestly, you could buy yourself a couple minutes if the attack came head on, you know. As I know, she's 24, it doesn't matter, your adrenaline gets going, you know, you can do everything in your power to fight off, because it seemed like it was down to the minute. So I mean, all you have to do is just jump over a bed, run away, scratch, kick, scream.
Even screaming at that point,
absolutely.
Right?
Scream, scream, kick, scratch, you know, go for the groin, do everything you can, go for the eyes. As a woman, you can, even if a guy's huge, you can do things to kind of buy yourself some time and space. So.
And these suspects were probably waiting for that exact moment for her to turn
and
her back.
Most people are looking for a victim, you know. They're not looking for someone to fight, so.
One interesting fact about this case also is that she wasn't sexually assaulted, which is one thing they always look for because it happens a lot, unfortunately. She had cash in her purse. She was wearing jewelry. None of that was taken. So this actually says a lot about what happens. It was a clear indication that Lindsay was targeted. But by who the fuck? Like, who was the suspect here? Obviously, again, Jason was crossed off the list. Could he have done it? Sure, but man, to pull that off and within 10 minutes when there was surveillance proof that he was leaving the auto body shop mere minutes before that pocket dial to her friend, he slowly moves to the bottom of the list of their suspects. And again, he was super cooperative. There was no reason to consider him, you know, a suspect. Now, jumping back to where I mentioned that Lindsay's father had some reservations about Jason's innocence. He hasn't crossed him fully off of his list, though, because he knows that Lindsay had opened up to him about their troubles just 6 weeks before Lindsay's murder. She had actually went out to Calgary to visit her dad where he was living at the time, and she told him all about her concerns with Jason, that he was extremely jealous and controlling, and that she was actually thinking about breaking up with him. But does that mean he would murder her? I don't know.
No,
like, we're talking a violent murder here.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'd like to think that there would be blood everywhere. The police officers show up, like, as this is happening.
Yeah, but if there is 30, 40, whatever stab wounds, there's not a chance that there's not going to be blood on you.
That's what I'm saying. So, there's no way he would have done this.
I call bullshit on that.
That's right. I mean, maybe her father's thinking that he could have some sort of involvement.
Because you guys break up doesn't mean you don't love each other.
Yeah, and from what I have researched, I don't think that he physically did it. I mean, there's just no way, but
the father somehow still feels like that's a possibility.
He just thinks he could have had some involvement, okay. Right?
Like, he could have helped orchestrate this whole plot to...
Right, and they're just trying to figure out, like, why.
Why would he have his friend with him, though? That's just adding more complexity to something.
I know, that's true.
That you got to worry about your friend knowing.
Yes, and I think his friend's identity has been retracted, so they haven't released any information about this particular friend. But you're absolutely right. Like, if he was going to do something, why would he have his friend with him at the time?
Involved, yeah.
It's so true. So, how this, you know, unfolds is, again, so frustrating. Like I mentioned at the beginning, it's one of those cases where I'm like, there was fucking minutes for this to happen. And I think that it clearly states that the people who pulled this off were experienced murderers. I mean, maybe they were hit men and women, but there were no, like, footprints, like, in blood. Like, you must have been covered in blood. Like, you stabbed someone 40 times, you're gonna be covered. Like, how was this done within, like, 11 minutes?
Your body's
just
under pressure.
Like, but why? And who would want to kill Lindsay and want her dead in such a vicious manner? 40 times, like, that's a lot, right?
Mm-hmm. Unless, I mean, maybe it's like a clothing thing. Maybe if they're, like, full of clothing, it doesn't really, like, spray. It kind of is contained within the layers.
No,
I don't know. I don't like blood, but just saying.
But yet here you are talking about blood. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of information and a lot of research and a lot of investigation that we haven't heard or seen yet, because you're absolutely right. You know, based on this, like, cast off spray and all these things that go into your face right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just.
Oh my God. So they start tracing back the mysterious calls that came from this potential buyer, right? Because you think back, leading up to the days of their murder.
What about the names? Was it not, like, listed with, like, the brokerage or whoever they called in? Like,
yes.
I guess they could just made up some name.
The phone and the number was completely made up.
Yeah,
so the phone was a burner phone, and it actually pinged 6 different towers in Victoria, BC, leading up to the murder. The phone also had never called any other number but Lindsay's number.
So it just had one purpose.
And
we know the real perpetrator, the woman, she is not blonde. We can cross that off. Because if she was blonde and got another blonde wig, that would be fucked up, right? So clearly, she's not blonde. We know that.
Right,
but
right.
Do they know like how they got out of the house? Did they go at the back door?
That's what they're thinking, because when the friend went to the backyard, the door was slightly ajar. So they think that they went out the back.
For seconds, like, of seeing.
Yeah.
Right.
And they hadn't been driving a car. They like walked up to the front door. So they could have either parked on a side street or across, like, we don't know.
Back street, yeah.
But like, just thinking if Jason would have been a few minutes earlier or walked in the door when he saw them go back in.
So much regret. Like, that's going to burn him the rest of his life for sure.
Oh, it's just, it's so unfortunate, especially in such a tight time frame with everything happening. According to the same True Crime Daily investigation, in January before her murder, the largest drug bust in Australia, in Alberta history occurred. So this was Sergeant Horsley that made this statement. He said, "We're talking millions upon millions of dollars in value of cocaine that was confiscated. And the people that lost these drugs were known that someone had spoken to the police. There was a snitch." So how does this tie into the murder?
Are we talking about the same thing right now?
Okay. Right. That's what it just, this case goes all over the place. If you'll remember, when Lindsay went to visit her dad in Calgary 6 weeks before the murder, she reached out to an old acquaintance from Victoria, once by phone and then once through Facebook.
Oh, she was like a mule or something, you think? That's why she actually went to Alberta?
We don't know.
It's to do with something? Okay, well, this is too many assumptions.
So we don't know the true nature of why she was reaching out to this old friend while she was in Calgary, supposedly visiting her father. But we do know is that the person that she had contacted while there was the family member of a man named Erickson Della Carzar, and that shortly after Lindsay went back to Victoria, he, along with 13 other people, were caught in that particular drug bust.
Okay, that kind of
brings so something fishy was happening there. Whether Lindsay, again, this is speculation and they don't know for sure, but was Lindsay somehow involved in this large drug bust? We don't know. She had never been, friends and family had said she's never been the type to be in sort of any drugs
all
or.
The time, though.
People don't know, right? Yeah. You think you know someone, maybe you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. So, again, back to this same report, they say what they can say is that a lot of people lost a lot of money, and it was a witch hunt that occurred where they were questioning everyone and anyone about what happened.
This feels like the Ozarks a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of does. It kind of does. It's like weird conspiracy things happening, right? So they know that someone spoke to the police, but they strongly believe that this doesn't have anything to do with her murder, but they have it in the back of their minds that something could have happened where Lindsay got caught up during that visit to Calgary in something that she shouldn't have, and maybe that this was a lesson by these cartels saying someone has to die for what has happened here. Right. All this like drug money gone. Someone, they had to send a message, right?
Either she was involved or they thought she may have been. And either way, they're just like,
maybe she was an easy target. Maybe it was someone that they didn't want to specifically kill off within their triangle. So maybe they were like, oh, here's this, you know, person that someone had, you know,
yeah,
it would be an easy target. So
don't get involved with things that involve.
Stay away from crime. People that are doing bad things. Maybe she didn't know. It's just, it's so unfortunate. There has been so many speculations on this case, you know, even down to Jason's mom and trying to take her out and how she could have had something to do with this because of the connections in the real estate industry. But again, she was kind of crossed off the list also. They had talks about someone suspicious in the real estate industry who worked for RE/MAX, and that this particular individual quit the day or two after Lindsay's murder, and there were suspicions there. But again, there's no clear indication that has been publicly announced as to who murdered Lindsay Buziak. I am confident that we are going to be back for part two on this story because it's still a pretty active case in news coverage. So you never know. I'm hoping that they do find who did this to Lindsay because justice needs to be served.
Well, look at the whole Christy Murak, is it? Mm-hmm. The last case. It took 25 years.
That's right. That's so right.
Maybe
we never
just
know.
13 years. And
I feel like her father is on a mission to find who did this and bring justice to.
You have to just keep try. Don't give up. Keep on going. Because that seems to be the case.
If you have any information whatsoever, or if you know what happened to Lindsay Buziak, please call Crime Stoppers. Not Crime Poppers. That's us. We can't help. But please, please, please call the Saanich Department Police Line at 1-888-980-1919 or Crime Stoppers, and you can leave anonymous tips at 1-800-222-TIPS. For episode notes and case files and documentation, images, all that good stuff, please visit our website at crimepoppers.com and hit us up on Instagram. We're over there all day, every day at Crime Poppers. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll pop open another case next week with you.
Can't wait, and be nice to your neighbors, everyone.